You're listening to the FQXI podcast. But now, the item that Puffy has been getting most excited about. Quantum pigeons.
Yes, we've covered some pretty bizarre quantum ideas over the years in this podcast, Brendan. But this new principle, proposed by FQXI members Yukiya Aharonov and Jeff Tollickson and others, really has to be one of the weirdest. It turns out that when you measure quantum systems in a particular way, you can get some very odd results. One example is the quantum pigeonhole principle. Let's say you have three pigeons and two pigeonholes, and you have to place the pigeons in those pigeonholes. What do you think would happen?
Is Puffy allowed to eat any of the pigeons?
No.
Okay, well, in that case, at least one hole will contain two pigeons at the same time. There's no way around it. Three pigeons, two pigeonholes.
Well, it turns out that in the quantum world, things aren't quite that simple. In fact, you can put three quantum particles into two boxes and yet find that no two particles are in the same box. I spoke with Jeff Tollickson of Chapman University earlier, who told me about this very strange result and how it describes a new kind of correlation between quantum particles that's even spookier than usual.
Let me start off by just reminding everybody what the traditional, the classical pigeonhole principle, which goes back a long time to actually Pierre Schley, the mathematician. Suppose you have two boxes or two pigeonholes, and you have three pigeons, and all the pigeons are in the two boxes, then it's a general theorem that it must be the case that in one of those boxes there will be at least two or more pigeons together at the same time.
Right, it hardly seems like you need a theorem for that. It just seems common sense.
Completely common sense and obvious, and it could never possibly be wrong, right?
Right.
Well, so,
except.
So it turns out in quantum mechanics it is wrong in the following sense, that, again, if you consider the simplest case in which we have three pigeons, or in our case we translate that into three particles that we can do, you know, precision measurements on in actual laboratories. Pigeons are difficult to deal with in the laboratory. So, so in this case, we start our three particles far away from each other, and we prepare them in some state of spin. Say, spin in the x direction is up. And it's important just to sort of emphasize the point that, you know, these three particles are very far separated from each other. We know experimentally how to prepare a situation so that there is no entanglement whatsoever.
Let's just talk for a second about entanglements, where you can take, you know, two or more particles, and if you prepare them together in a certain way, then their properties become kind of intertwined, so that no matter how far apart you take them, when you carry out a measurement on one, the influence of that measurement has an effect on its partner as well.
That's right. But that's the preparation or the preselection. There is no entanglement.
The preselection is what we usually talk about when we do any experiment at all. It's just we want to do an experiment on some stuff, and so we prepare it, and that's a preselection. You know, we prepare what kind of things we want to put into the experiment, and then we conduct the experiment. And in some sense, that's where most scientific experiments then just stop. We've performed it, and then we look at the result. And with post-selection, that's sort of an additional step that kind of takes place after the experiment has been conducted, where you kind of choose which of the results you're going to analyze in more detail based on some criteria.
Right. And the post-preparation or post-selection is, you could do almost anything, frankly, but to make it simple, we chose spin up in the y direction. And let me emphasize again that in that post-selection measurement, again, the three particles are far apart from each other, and there is no entanglement in that post-selection measurement. Another way of thinking about that is you could say that, well, the particles, they don't know about each other.
And for some reason, depending on the choice of which particular sort of output materials you decide to analyze in detail, based on that sort of later action, that can have an effect on what actually happened during the experiment that was carried out in between.
That's right. I mean, the absolutely extraordinary thing is that we showed that they have correlations which are stronger than classical, which is the kind of thing that we thought you would need entanglement, either in the initial or in the final state, to be able to create or to manifest. And so we discovered that when you take the very step of even including a post-selection, then there are fundamental new aspects to the whole question of what is an interaction and what is a correlation. And so with this pre-selection and that post-selection, we can arrange that no two of those three particles are ever together in the same box, even though all three particles are, in fact, in those two boxes. And translating to pigeons, that means, you know, no two pigeon is together in the same box, even though all three pigeons are indeed in those two boxes. And then this scales up to arbitrary number of particles. You could have huge numbers of particles all crammed into those two boxes. Nevertheless, no two of those particles are ever together in the same box.
Right, okay. I don't know why I'm saying okay, because it's again, something that just, you know, it's just making my brain melt a little bit. So you could have an infinite number of pigeons and squeeze them into three boxes, but at no time would there be more than one pigeon in any of these boxes. Your pigeons have gone missing somewhere. Where have they gone? You know, where are the pigeons, Jeff? Where are they?
The right way to say it is that no two of them are ever together. So say you label them pigeon one, pigeon two, and pigeon three. So you can simultaneously measure whether pigeon one and pigeon two are together. The answer is no, they're never together. And at the same time, we weakly measure whether pigeon two and pigeon three are together. The answer is no, those two pigeons are never together. And also simultaneously, at the same time, we measure whether or not pigeon one and pigeon three, so that's all possible combinations of two pigeons, we see the answer is also no.
Okay, so there's something tricky happening here with the way that we're phrasing this, I guess. You can't ever identify a pair of pigeons that are in the same box, even if you run through every possible combination of pairs of pigeons.
And yes, in some sense that's true, because this new aspect of correlations and the nature of interaction, it does require you to ask these sort of joint questions. Are any two particles ever together? And the answer is no. Now, if you were to just simply ask, where is an individual pigeon, if you were to strongly ask that question, namely, you open the box and said, okay, you know, which pigeon is there, then you would see exactly what you would expect if there is no correlation whatsoever between these pigeons. You would see half the time the pigeons are in the left box, and the other half the time the pigeons are in the right box, which is exactly what you would expect from the way the state was prepared. It's a 50-50 combination, and it's also exactly what you would expect if there was no correlations between them whatsoever.
Now, I'm going to say something which I'm pretty sure is wrong, but you're going to have to sort of explain to me why it's the wrong way of thinking, because I'm going to give you a very crude interpretation, which isn't even sort of thinking about quantum mechanics at all, but it's thinking about the classical sense. In terms of asking this question, you know, in the very clever way that you have about trying to think about two pigeons at the same time, you know, couldn't it just be that, you know, if I first of all, I have three pigeons, and I ask, are pigeon one and pigeon two in the same box? And I get the answer, no. And then I ask, are pigeon two and pigeon three in the same box? And I get the answer, no. And then I ask, are pigeon one and pigeon three in the same box? And I get the answer, no. Could it just be that the pigeons are flying about between the boxes so that, you know, every time I ask the question, you know, they've kind of settled into this pattern where the particular two that I'm interested in are in different boxes. But by the time I've formulated, you know, the next question, they've just moved.
Well, this is a very good question. I mean, there's all kinds of ways of designing experiments such that that interpretation would not be a plausible interpretation. The basic setup, three electrons, say, and now we're just measuring the electrostatic interaction between them, and we see that they have no idea that there's any other electron next to them. There's no electrostatic repulsion of the electron. I mean, just to give a sort of a naive example, in this case, the electrons would have to be doing some kind of faster-than-light transfer, and they're doing this even though there's no forces that are introduced here that would cause them to zip back and forth, and so on and so forth.
So where are these correlations coming from? I mean, is everything just correlated with everything else? Pigeons or cats or people or electrons or photons or just anything and everything?
Well, I mean, that's certainly not the way we're taught to think about physics. In some sense, locality or the separability of the universe in general seems to be a sacred principle. And it is indeed, you're right, extremely mysterious and actually very profound. You know, as Monty Python would put it, and now for something completely different.
Are there any practical applications of this?
Yes.
For hiding pigeons, perhaps.
For overpopulation of pigeons, for example.
Yes, or to save the housing situation. You could have an infinite number of people living in two houses.
The housing, absolutely. All such applications like that. Well, I had the pleasure of sitting in on Richard Feynman's class just right after he published this famous paper, which was one of the critical things that led to the whole quantum information sort of paradigm shift. And little did people know that this thing that was in the esoteric regions of foundations of physics, namely entanglement and all the things that people were trying to do to verify it experimentally, little did people know that there would be so many applications. And people even argued that this was the source of the power of all these new quantum computing and so on and so forth. Well, the physics behind the quantum pigeonhole effect, we believe, will have many such applications as well. I mean, this is a ubiquitous aspect of nature. But we expect that something similar will happen here.
That was Jeff Tollickson, Melting Our Brains. You can read more about his work on the website, www.fqxi.org/community/podcast.